Hello, everyone. Welcome to Interface, the podcast for teachers and educators, all about online life for children and young people and what you need to know to best support them.
Interface is from the Southwest Grid for Learning, one of three organisations that make up the dedicated UK Safer Internet Centre. With you this time are myself and Ailish Hunter. Ailish, how are you? What have we got coming up this episode?
Yeah, no, I'm doing good, Jess. And today we've got a really candid chat coming up. Teacher and content creator Mr. P is joining us to talk about some disastrous typos in the school WhatsApp group chat using AI and teaching media literacy.
So it's sort of looking at ways, first and foremost, of how the technology can help us as teachers do our job more effectively, more efficiently. I don't think there's anything that's come along that's had such an immediate impact on reducing workload more than some of this AI stuff.
So Mr. P was really optimistic about using AI to save time on the boring, low-impact tasks, which was refreshing to hear. All right, let's get into it.
Hello, my name is Lee Parkinson, otherwise known as Mr. P. I am a primary school teacher from Manchester. I also have my own education consultancy business where I go into schools, giving training to teachers how to best use technology in their classrooms. I also share funny videos, tips, insights on social media. I'm the host of Two Mr. P's in a podcast, and I am one of the creators of TeachMate AI.
Okay, wow, what an intro to yourself. Hello, is it Mr. P or should we call you Lee, or what's the right way?
Whatever's easiest. I've been called a lot worse, so I'll take either. Whatever you want to say.
I'm going to go with Mr. P.
Yeah,
I quite like Mr. P. So for any teachers, educators that haven't come across you or your brother Adam, do you know, I was quite interested in the podcast. Tell us a bit about that. What's on the podcast? What does it do?
So we've had the podcast going now for, I think, 5 years. 2018 we started it. So I've been sort of sharing, making videos, and obviously doing my training for the best part of 10 years now. So I built up quite it sounds dead self-indulgent, but quite a bit of a following on social media. And then we were on a family holiday about 5 years ago, and we were sat around the pool after a long day soaking in the rays, and we're just sharing funny stories of, because he's a HLTA in a school as well. And right, obviously with all the traveling that I do, I listen to a lot of podcasts. So I sort of said, do you know what? When we get home, we should sit there, record ourselves and just see what happens. And yeah, it just sort of took off from there. So obviously having the social media platform where it was able to reach a lot of people very quickly meant that it picked up momentum, straight away. And then obviously during the pandemic, it sort of really blew up. I think because a lot of teachers found it quite a nice way of still feeling connected as part of a staff, even though we're all sort of working our little bubbles. And it's just gone from sort of strength to strength. So we've just come off the back of our second nationwide sort of live tour, where we do a sort of a live episode alongside a bit of sort of stand-up. And we've got book 3 coming out in August. So,
do you know, you're putting me to shame. It's like, what have I done since the pandemic? An awful lot, I have to say.
No. It's been amazing, and it's really just happened all from people's support, really. So, you know, having people share it and engage and listen to it has made it the success it is, really.
So it sounds like it's quite good fun. I bet there's some juicy tales that come out.
We have
a podcast.
Yeah, we get sent a lot of stories, and I put posts out all the time on my social media. So we recorded an episode last night, and the sort of thread we have was around, you know, when teachers misspell things, you know, autocorrect gets the best of you. So there was the one that stands out was a teacher who had to text the head teacher to say they'd not finished the reports that night because the caretaker was kicking them out of school, but spelt kicking with an L at the beginning.
Oh no.
That's the sort of caliber.
And there is an online safety aspect to that, right?
Yeah. I mean, do you know what? We always say it's the educational podcast where you don't learn anything, but through telling these tales of teachers making some catastrophic errors and mistakes.
We've
had a lot of things that you accidentally Google thinking it'll be completely innocent. I mean, I've had that as a teacher where you Google something and something else pops up, like no pun intended. We're doing some research about the rainfost and a child Googled
I'm really trying not to laugh.
Oh, I'm no, you can not. Laugh. It was fine. Know, but, you know, I just find it funny that schools pay all these all this money for, like, firewalls and they just don't protect. The funniest one we had, so the one I was saying there, we're doing rainforest and a child Googled exotic birds. But one of the funniest ones we've had was this letter. I got sent this letter on social media. Someone sent it me. So this was an email that was sent to parents. Said, dear year four parents, this afternoon during a music lesson, the year four class was singing about a grandfather clock. The children did not know what a grandfather clock was.
Where this is going.
Yeah. So the teacher Googled grandfather clock to show them, but a spelling error meant that the children briefly saw the image of a naked man.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
And it's how you recover, right? How you recover from that situation.
We've had stories where, you know, teachers accidentally text their head teacher or text the wrong WhatsApp group. You know, it's sort of, it's not educational, but it is in a way, the podcast, because I think everyone then will just double check when they're sending something away. You know.
There's nothing like a real story. Is
well,
there?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It brings it home to you.
So
wow, okay. Yeah. Okay, that went in a certain direction I wasn't quite expecting.
Some start of the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally, totally. Have you ever had anything like that, Ailish? If you think back to your school days, was there ever anything that regarding the educators and technology?
Don't think so. I'm trying to think now. A lot of my friends are in their final months of their teaching degrees, and so they've all just been on placement. I don't think I've quite heard any horror stories to that degree. I think it's more just like, oh, silly mistakes like the kids make, or like, you know, when they call them mum or something like that. So I've not quite heard WhatsApp group chat ones just yet, but I'm sure once they start teaching full time, I'll get all the gossip.
Yeah, yeah, it's a baptism of fire for sure.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, it's it is funny. I mean, that's why I love teaching. I think it's the best job in the world, because you're working with the most hilarious, unintentional comedians on the planet, aren't you? And children will always come out with something that makes you giggle. I love the little misunderstandings, you know. We got sent one the other day where a teacher said to a class, children, does anyone know who Marie Curie is? And the children said, oh, it's that singer who sings All I Want for Christmas Is You.
How long have you been teaching then?
So I've been teaching now 16 years, yeah. So I am officially at my school now, I'm the longest serving member of staff. Bar my SLT. So, you know, and I'm starting to feel it as well. I'm starting to feel it. Especially when you sort of make pop culture references to your kids and it just goes completely over the heads. I was teaching coordinates to year four recently, and I was sort of talking about how, you know, you go across the hall before you go up the stairs to plot the coordinate. So we've got to find the x-axis. And then I said, Can anyone, children, tell me why? Oh. And there was utter silence in the whole class, and I've never felt so old in my life.
Love it.
So I'm always looking for those little nods of nostalgia. But just last week, my class decided to bring something back that has just sort of ruined. I mean, I don't know if you remember back in the day with Dick and Dom, the game Bogies.
Oh, I was actually watching clips of that the other day because it was such a great show, and I don't know how it got made.
Yeah, so that's made a comeback. Any teacher listening to this, it's going to happen.
Strikes fear into the classroom. Yeah.
Was I tempted to join in and show them how it's properly done?
Yes.
Yes, but I had to teach fractions, so I had to just tell them, right, next one who says that will be staying in at break, you know?
Let's talk about tech in the classroom then.
Yep.
Tech for teachers.
Yep.
So 16 years, you must have seen the difference in that time.
Yes and no. I mean, obviously, the amount of technology we've got access to outside of school, the impact of children being connected to devices has been vast. It's been, you know, such a radical change for sure. And I think the amount of knowledge and understanding teachers need to be able to navigate and understand how children are using this technology at home has been massive. As far as teachers using technology in the classroom, obviously the pandemic's been, you know, I always talk about how, you know, it was the most challenging aspect of any of our careers, the pandemic, the lockdown. But I think a couple of positives that came out of it was the first time really where teachers were almost forced to start using and embracing technology to help those children who were learning from home. And I think we should be really proud as a profession of how we stood up to all the challenges we faced and the sort of learning, innovation, creativity that teachers showed to embrace this technology to support those children who were learning from home, remote teaching, etc. So that was a real positive. What was sort of annoying is I thought we're really going to kick on from that. I thought, well, if teachers seen the benefits and these tools can continue to help children day in day in the classroom, why not continue to use it? But a lot of schools sort of went back to what we've always done. And obviously with budgets the way they are, I think you get into a point now where a lot of schools may have bought a set of whatever it might be, iPads 10 years ago, when they're not now updating and they've not really got the budget to replace that technology. So it's a real shame, because I think the technology has the potential to, you know, remove barriers for certain children. On a lot of my training, I'm constantly trying to show teachers how the tech can support children with lots of different needs. I mean, my two boys are both dyslexic. And it's interesting, as identical twins, they've got sort of different strands of dyslexia. So Charlie can mask it a lot better than Harry can. And the way this technology is able to remove that barrier, because I firmly believe dyslexia should just not be a barrier to learning in 2024. And I think the reason why it is more down to us as teachers either not being aware, not knowing how to embrace this technology to sort of remove that barrier. So a lot of my training focuses on that. So I think the biggest barrier for a lot of teachers when it comes to embracing and using technology is the time element. I think teachers are, you know, more open now than ever before. And I think, you know, I try and remind teachers that actually the journey they've been on with technology has been massive over the past few years. And teaching's such a full-on consuming job that we very rarely take moments to sit back and reflect on where we've come from. So I always say, well, compare what you can do with technology now to what you were doing 5 years ago. And I think you'll be really surprised at how far you've come. But the problem for a lot of teachers is workload is so ridiculous, and the time element isn't there for teachers to then learn and take on new ideas to make more out of technology, really. So
what are your tips then? What are your tips for a teacher in that situation? They haven't got much time. They're aware that maybe they're not quite keeping on top of, you know, or using technology in the most efficient way or effective way, or
yeah,
what are your kind of top tips?
I mean, the problem is it can sometimes come across like there's so much out there, it can be quite overwhelming. So I think it's understanding that you're not going to know absolutely everything and taking your time with it. But I think my training now has evolved a lot to ask questions about what is the best use of our time. So workload wise, you know, are there ways in which the technology can help us save time in other areas? So, you know, off the back of the pandemic, a lot of schools, teachers started using tools such as ClassDojo or Seesaw or Google Classroom. And I say, well, you can continue to use them day to day in the classroom as a way of evidencing learning digitally. So if you're spending hours a day photocopying, printing to stick evidence in books of tasks you've done with the students, having a platform online, and it's sort of like, well, if we can use that, that's almost the digital exercise book. So straight away, teachers can end up saving themselves hours because they're not having to print and photo. You know, this idea that, like, in our school, we don't do book scrutinies, because I hate the term book scrutiny. I don't think you can teach a broad and balanced curriculum if you do book scrutinies, because it creates this mentality where teachers feel they're being deemed a success by what their books look like. And so moving away from that idea and saying, well, if you've got this technology that allows us to evidence learning, why not do learning reviews? And it's a case of Ofsted or SLT, whoever it might be. Yes, you can have a look at the books, you can have a look on the platform, and you can speak to the children. And therefore, you're getting a much better, well-rounded view. But then it gives the teachers that license, that freedom, trust, and time to teach the most broad and balanced curriculum, because they're not always tied to, well, I've got to print something, stick in a book. So it's sort of looking at ways, first and foremost, of how the technology can help us as teachers do our job more effectively, more efficiently. It's like with all the emerging AI technology. I don't think there's anything that's come along that's had such an immediate impact on reducing workload more than some of this AI stuff. And I think teachers should be looking at using it to help them with certain admin tasks that can be quite time consuming and detract away from the most important aspect of the job, which is the teaching, you know?
Yeah, we had our colleague Ken on the podcast recently talking about AI. And one of his big messages was, you know, use it or lose it, as in get with the program, people, start using AI as part of your job, because in 5 years' time, you know, that's you're going to need to be a person that has that skill set. well as the fact that it's bringing in all of the efficiencies, the potential for teaching, reducing workload and everything is phenomenal.
I saw a good quote about it saying, you know, the way to use AI is you get it to do the doing, not necessarily the thinking. So the thing I keep telling teachers is there's got to be a two-step approach to using this sort of generative AI now, which is step one, you can get it to create stuff, but more, just as if not more importantly, you've got to use your professional judgment to evaluate it and check it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's understanding that the AI isn't perfect, has the potential to get the odd thing wrong, but to do some of the heavy lifting. You know, if you were to go on to like Family Fortunes and Gino De Campo said, we asked 100 teachers, what's your favorite task to do as a teacher? You said, write a risk assessment. Our survey said, And I think, well, if the AI can do the bulk of it, you know, Matt, the way I look at it, if I can get AI to write something as well as I would, is it the best use of my time when you've got teachers working on average 57 hours a week? And look, that's not going to be the solution to the recruitment and retention crisis we're facing in education. But, you know, since we launched the TeachMate platform, it's saving teachers on average around about 10 hours a week. And that can be massive, make such a difference and have a knock-on impact to other elements such as, you know, well-being. And my view on well-being is quite frank in that, you know, the best way in which you can improve a teacher's well-being is to trust them to do the job they're capable of doing and therefore reduce workload. Because I think when you get into the workload question, there was some research that came out a couple of weeks ago looking into the unpaid overtime of different jobs. And the average number of unpaid hours a week across all professions was 4.4 hours. That jumps up to 26.3 hours for teachers, which is mad, which equates to about 15 grand a year, by the way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a sort of unwritten rule in education that you're never going to work your contracted hours. And, you know, I've never come across a teacher who isn't willing to work, you know, put a bit extra in. I think the frustrating thing for teachers is most of that extra unpaid overtime doesn't have an impact on teaching and learning. Majority of it's just more about us having to prove that we're doing the job the vast majority of us are capable of doing, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think the AI can really help with a lot of that, but bigger discussions after, you know, the having a government in place that are going to fund and trust and you know, value teachers and...
Yeah, there's cultural
stuff. I won't even open the whole
there,
can of worms about Ofsted.
Yeah, no, that's a different podcast.
Yeah.
Let's talk about kids online then.
Yeah.
So educators supporting children, living their online lives.
Yeah.
What's your take on that?
I mean, if I was education secretary of this country, digital literacy would be a subject in its own right and at the forefront of the curriculum. I think one of the biggest failures of our education system in England is that we don't do anywhere near enough around internet safety, online safety, teaching children how to make the most of this technology. Because, you know, I can't remember who came up with this quote, but it's like in 2024, you don't have a choice about using the internet. The choice you make is how well you do it.
I think that was the old Eric Qualman stuff, wasn't it? Socialnomics, you know, YouTube videos.
Yeah.
He used to do these great videos with, like, I think it was Fatboy Slim music. He used to have on them. It was like rocking along. Yeah.
And I love that. And it's true. I mean, you know, the way some people, I love social media. I think it's one of the best tools out there if you use it in the right way. Like, I'm able to do this now, and I, you know, all those things that we've talked about, the opportunities I've had have come from me being able to use social media in a positive way. But then
because a lot of educators are really nervous about social media, right?
Oh, absolutely.
They're all changing their names online. They're like, nobody's going to find me.
All of my teachers at high school, I remember there was one of our new teachers. She was just out from being like a student teacher, like university, and she had to change her name completely, respell it all, because kids found, like, from S1 had found, like, her Facebook, Instagram, everything, and like she had to private everything, really, like, vet all of her social medias that it was all okay in case they found anything. I know social media is for everyone, and it feels weird that you can find your teachers, but also weird to try and find your teachers at the same time.
Do you find that then, Mr. Pete? Do all your kids watch you online, or are you like too old? Like, my kids have no interest in my work at all, because clearly I'm old and I have nothing relevant to say. Like, they would never listen to the podcast or anything. It would be ridiculous. Are your kids like that?
I mean, I'm quite lucky being a primary school teacher. So, you know, the children at my school should not be on social media anyway. So if any of them do come up to me and go, oh, I watched one of your videos last night, I'd be like, oh, I really hope you didn't, because you are breaking the rules. You are not old enough, and I'd hate to have to report that you're underage watching something online. And then I say, so what did you say? I've not seen anything, you know. So, but at the same time, you know, I think obviously as a professional doing the job that we do, we've got, you know, you've got to make sure your social media. So I have obviously the Mr. P stuff, and then I have my own personal private stuff, and that's all locked down. And that's very much just for my close friends and family. And you've just got to be aware that it's what we always teach the children. What you put out there is there forever. So, you know, what I try and do with my social media is, yeah, I can be a bit outspoken, but I'm trying to do it in the right way as far as saving the, you know, oh, not saving, I'm not, but, you know, discussing issues within education that need to be discussed. And, you know, I don't expect everyone to agree with my opinion on everything, but I think you can appreciate I come from the viewpoint of being a passionate educator who wants our education system to thrive and do the best for our students. And so I like to think that with my social media that I can sort of inspire students as well to say, look, when you're old enough, if you've got a passion, an interest, a skill, a hobby, and you can share it in a positive and engaging way, that nowadays may well create a job opportunity, career. But at the same time, if you use it in a negative way, and you post things online that, you know, aren't appropriate or responsible, then it will probably stop you getting a job. So I try and educate the children that it is a choice that they make. And I think, you know, again, going back to using the likes of Seesaw, in a way, every time the children use Seesaw in class, they are effectively publishing to the web. So it gives me the perfect opportunity to reinforce that messaging. And I just think the fact that they are, whether we like to admit it or not, I think the current statistics are that 3 out of every 4 Key Stage 2 child has an online social profile, whether it's gaming or social media. So, you know, I come across some schools who sometimes will say, oh, we're not going to teach children about it because they're not old enough. And I say, no, you've got to. So by the time they are old enough, they know how to navigate this world in a positive and responsible way.
What was it? The latest Ofcom stats, I'm trying to remember, it's something like 20% of 3-year-olds have their own smartphone. Something like that. And then quite a proportion of that have got a profile.
So I always say,
so this whole thing is, yeah.
I always say my training, so when you've got like I do 3 out of every 4, and I say, but of that 1 out of 4 who isn't on social media, how many of them have had their whole lives documented online through mums and dads' accounts?
Yeah,
so, you know, a big challenge for teachers is trying to engage parents as well, because I find that to be the biggest challenge in that parents...
All right, what's your pearls of wisdom there then? Give us your little nuggets.
Well, I mean, it's very... As teachers, it's really difficult to just engage parents. For me personally, as a parent, obviously the best piece of advice I can give any parent out there is keep your children off social media as long as possible. The longer you can keep them off there, the better. But I recognise that it's a challenge, because children, you know, their friendships, their relationships are sort of intertwined with the online world. So I've only recently allowed my kids on social media. So they get an hour a day. So time limits, time restrictions are an absolute must. Like, it's the easiest thing to do on the phone, on your students. I mean, you can do it from your phone if you've got it linked up through Apple family account. So I can go in and I can sort of set time limits. So they get an hour a day on social media, which I think is really important. So it's sort of giving them, well, it's that hour, it's whenever you want it. You can have it in the morning, in the afternoon, whatever works best for you, but that's all you're getting. And then they don't have the phones in the bedrooms. So,
Look at you, Mr. P, perfect parent, right?
Well, yeah, you know, well, they don't have it at night in the bedroom.
Yeah.
They've got to bring me their phones before they go to bed, and they get charged in my room.
This is Interface, a podcast for educators about digital and online life from Southwest Grid for Learning. We'll be back with Mr. P very soon to hear his tips for teaching online safety.
The Interface podcast is all about keeping children, young people and education communities safe, happy and confident in everything relating to technology and online life.
And the other thing to know is that SWGFL, the people behind Interface, have a whole host of support, tools and resources. We also have a number of helplines available. One of these is POSH, the Professionals Online Safety Helpline, which is open to any educators and professionals who need support with an online safety issue. give us a call.
Thanks, Jess. And not only that, schools and other organisations can download the Report Harmful Content button to add to their website to support any user over the age of 13 in reporting anything they experience online that they find harmful or worrying.
Also, take a look at our 360 degree safe tools. These tools support a comprehensive, whole school approach to online safety. There's also Project Evolve, an educational toolkit to support digital competency in children and young people. There is a lot available, and it's free.
Free is always good, and you're right, Jess, it is a lot. And I appreciate it's a lot for you to take in, listening like this. So don't worry if you've been scrabbling around for a pen or you're not sure where the pause or rewind buttons are. You can find all of this information online at swgfl.org.uk. And you can also find us on Twitter and Instagram with the handle at @swgfl_official.
Also, we've put all the links you need in the show notes for the Interface series that you'll find in your podcast player.
Welcome to the second half of this episode of Interface. We're back with Mr. P.
You know, you've got to be in control of the algorithm of social media and not let the algorithm control you. You've got to understand what social media wants from you. Is it wants to keep you on social media as long as possible. So everything you do and everything you type in and everything you search for becomes part of this algorithm that creates your For You page or your newsfeed. So you can turn that into something quite productive. So I often say on my training, the best CPD platform for me over the past couple of years has been TikTok. Because if I want to find new websites, new apps, new AI tools to use as a teacher, I go into TikTok and that's what I search for. And that's what I start watching and liking. And that tells TikTok if this is the sort of content that's going to keep him on the platform, because that's all social media wants. It wants you to stay on the platform as long as possible. It's going to curate a feed full of that sort of content. But yeah, I do it myself. It's like, you know, every so often TikTok or Instagram or Facebook will throw a video at you because someone similar to you is watching it. And if you don't want to see that sort of content, you've got to tell the platform you don't want to watch it. You know, I've been on a bit of a health kick since New Year, so I've lost nearly 2 stone, right?
Wow.
And AI's helped. Well done. Thank you very much. AI's helped with that massively. So I've made the team at TeachMate build a few tools that can help me with exercise and diet, and there's a recipe generator, all that sort of stuff. But then TikTok, so my TikTok For You page at the minute is some teacher stuff, a lot of United content, and then loads of low calorie, high protein recipe ideas. And then every so often, TikTok will try and tempt me. It'll try and throw a video at me going, oh, McDonald's have got the Big Tasty back, because in the past they might have liked it, or people similar to me are obviously watching that. And I'm going, I hold my finger down going, I don't want to see this sort of stuff. So the time I'm going to spend on social media can be quite productive and useful. We have lots of discussions about that. So I try and teach them as well about how that algorithm works. And, you know, one of my golden rules is comparison is the thief of joy. So I'm constantly trying to teach them that what they see on social media is not the real world. It's what someone's choosing to share with you. So, you know, open dialogue is massive.
Wow, that's amazing. So let's think about wrapping up, because we've been chatting for ages. What's your kind of top tips then? Top tips for educators?
Yeah, well, I've got to give a big shout out to Project Evolve. That's my go-to number one resource in the classroom. The fact that there is a lesson, an idea, a resource for every single one of the objectives for the Education for Connected World document. I think obviously not seeing it as digital literacy, but seeing it as literacy, I think it's really
digital
important.
Digital life is life. That's my mantra.
So, you know, trying to embed it in as many other subjects as possible and making links. And
I think,
you know,
that's the only way to do it, really, isn't it?
It is. I mean, so some things can be taught in a more isolated way, but I think, you know, if you're going to do a lesson in history where children are doing a little bit of research for some facts about, I don't know, Julius Caesar, you've got the perfect opportunity there to educate them about, be discerning and evaluating content, what are the telltale signs of whether a website's trustworthy, and you know, and getting them to understand that yes, there's some great useful information out on the internet, but there's also not so useful stuff. So I think the opportunity to embed it in everything is really important. Trying your best to engage parents, I think, is a challenge, don't get me wrong, but if you can.
It is. I hear this a lot from people. It's, you know, from educators. Yeah, it's an ongoing issue.
Yeah, because it's just parents, I mean, again, parents, majority of them are great, but, you know, it's a case, I've had it before, where parents will come in and say, oh, my child was being picked on a WhatsApp group. What are you going to do about it? And you're like, well, the six? What are you letting them on a WhatsApp group at 6? You know, it's that sort of, you know, and this, but it's not just with the technology, it's everything, all of societal sort of issues seem to be getting lumped on teachers at the minute. So, you know, it is a challenge. So I think making it a focus, you know, I always talk about Internet Safety Day, not, you know, every day is Internet Safety Day. And having open discussions about it and, you know, practicing what you preach. So as much as I have been, you know, like I say, what I try and instill in my children is what I try and do myself as well. So I don't always get the balance right. So my screen time's not great, but I do try my best to set the right example.
Never really hear from half influencer, half teacher. It's an interesting perspective. It's nice to hear from both sides, I guess.
Yeah, I'm not a massive fan of the term influencer.
Isn't it creators these days? Isn't that what it creators?
I prefer creators. Yeah, like there's a term in teaching called edu-celeb, and I've been called that quite a bit, and I absolutely hate it. I hate it because as soon as someone calls you that, people then just want to have a go at you and bring you down. And ultimately, my thing is not about getting as many sort of likes and follows. It's always just trying to add value and give people a helping hand. And even if it's just a teacher who's had a bit of a crap day can watch one of the videos and sort of go, all right, it's not just me. It sort of helps, you know. So
it is wonderful, isn't it, if you do that kind of work and you think actually you're getting, you know, what I particularly like, if I go out and do sessions and I get feedback, you know, people come up to me and they go, that was really helpful or whatever. And it's just, yeah, feel good factor.
It is, yeah.
So Mr. P, whereabouts can we find you online and all your public profiles?
Yeah, so I'm pretty much on every platform. So if you just search ICT with Mr. P on Facebook, ICT_Mr. P on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. My website, MrPICT.com, has a lot of my CPD online alongside information for school training. And of course, there's TeachMateAI.com, which is the AI platform I've helped develop that harnesses it all for teachers. Oh, and of course, the podcast as well. So that's at TwoMrPsPodcast.com. So the number two, MrPsPodcast.com, yeah.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, no worries. Thank you.
I really enjoyed that conversation. He has such a unique perspective. So as always, let's pick the chat apart and look for key practical takeaways for teachers and educators. What do you think, Jess? Where should we start with this one?
Hey, you mentioned Project Evolve. Yeah. Aha, got another mention. So if anybody here listening has not heard of Project Evolve, it's a progression framework of lots of educational materials that you can use covering 8 different aspects of digital life for working with young people aged from 4 up to 18. You can find a link to it in the episode description. It's a free resource, folks, so go and use it. Fabulous, dear Mr. P. Was aware of it and using it. This is great. So that was, yeah, that was brilliant. What did you pick up from the conversation?
Yeah, no, my favourite part was definitely the teacher fails, hearing him talk about his podcast and all the stories and insights he's got from being a teacher and how embarrassing stories, they're so common. Every teacher has an embarrassing moment and mess up in front of the class. And it is quite funny and refreshing to hear that it's not the end of the world as I kind of thought it was. Also, managing to be a teacher online does sound quite tricky, having to vet your profiles and make sure they're okay if anyone finds them. But also it's tough because teachers do have kind of like a social life and everything. So it's hard to balance all of that and keep private and respectable type thing.
Yeah, it was interesting. And he was talking about having, like you say, there's 2 different profiles. You can never rely on that, by the way, people. Like, never rely on a private profile and nobody's going to find you, because they do if they really want to. That whole thing about, you know, how you handle it, you know, if you have a digital fail, how you handle it, because people are watching you, your colleagues are watching you, but kids as well. So, yeah, getting it right. And of course, he talked loads about AI efficiencies, which we've covered a little bit on the podcast before. But just the use of technology and improving teachers' lives, and of course all of his resources, MrPICT.com, seems to be a lot there, right? Wow, he is a busy person. So yeah, loads. I thought it was a really useful episode, one definitely to bookmark. Thank you for listening to Interface. If you are new to the series, go back and listen to dozens of previous episodes. We've covered educators on social media with Bobby Siegel. We've talked about children accessing pornography, AI in education,
yep,
and so much.
Plenty of insight and support and new episodes every month. There are always links to SWGFL support and resources in the show notes alongside each episode. Please subscribe so episodes are automatically downloaded to your device when they're released, and please recommend Interface to friends and colleagues so they can find us too. We are also on social media at SWGFL_official on both Twitter and Instagram.
This episode of Interface was produced by Patrick Wallace with original music from Alex Fraser. It's a Bespoken Media production.